Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Stu does America.
We have a show on YouTube. Yes, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. If you subscribe there, you hit the bell for notifications. You'll be alerted every time that we post some new cool thing. Also, like the pages. Do the thing, I don't know, do the things you're supposed to do on social media. What are those things? I don't know what you're supposed to do. You do them. You probably do them for other shows or other people or other things you follow. Do those things for me, whatever those things are. I appreciate it. If you have a moment. If not, don't worry about it. BlazeTV.com/Stu is the place to go. Or actually, StuDoesAmerica.com. If you go there and use the code Stu at checkout, you can get $20 off your Blaze TV subscription and get even more involved in the Blaze TV community. We would love to have you a part of it. Angela Morabito is going to be here again. She's been on the show before, but she's going to be here to talk about the latest disturbing numbers on how COVID affected our kids' education. The Tulsi Gabbard confirmation saga has finally come to an end. We'll tell you about that. But we're going to start by doing the art of the deal. And yes, you know, I will say this. We are now just a few days past the Philadelphia Eagles winning the Super Bowl again, which is incredible. And I get in this mode. Last time they won, I probably went about 6 months before I was annoyed about anything. Like everything in my entire life made me happy. You know, a car would, you know, rear end me. I'd be like, just go ahead. I'm not even gonna call the police or the insurance companies. You go ahead. I'll just live with the dent. Like, I was in that mindset, and I'm still there. Of course, we're only a few days after this, but it did sort of remind me that maybe it's a good time to kind of go over something that I've been thinking about a little bit when it comes to politics. I'm in a point where nothing bothers me right now. Nothing shakes me. I'm in a good mood. And that is something that I try to apply to life in general, many times unsuccessfully when it comes to covering topics on this show. I like to talk to you in a way that I don't like to freak out about every little thing. That's just not the way I like to do the show. It's not what this show is. It will never be what this show is. I tend to see the world in a way that, like, you know, a lot of the stuff that people freak out about is honestly not that big of a deal. And I try to, you know, sift through that and find the stuff that is a big deal, stuff that actually does make a difference, stuff that you should care about or maybe you look at it with the same level of alarm that I do. And the Trump era highlights this better maybe than any other era in our politics, because Trump is always talking about something, right? Trump is always out there. He's got a big idea. He's out there in front of the media and he says something, and then the media takes the most the craziest, most hyperbolic version of what he says, twist it 9,000 times, turn it inside out, throw it through the washing machine and the dryer, take it on the other side, and tell you the world is going to end in one way or another, right? Like, this media era with Donald Trump is like the least stew-friendly world that you could possibly imagine. And I got to do a show in that environment every single day. And so when we think about topics on this show, we think about them in a very specific way. Let me give you some examples about this. Here's some stories that have happened over the past couple of weeks that honestly I haven't spent that much time on the show talking about. Okay, let me give you a few of them. Riviera of the Middle East. How Trump sees Gaza as a real estate deal. Wow, he wants to take over Gaza and build like a big hotel there. He's going to turn it into another Trump resort. Who knows? Golf courses everywhere. And, you know, I heard a lot of shows go on and on and on and on analyzing about whether that was a good idea or a bad idea. It's very interesting, I'm sure. We didn't really talk about it at all. Now, there's another development with this. Netanyahu now warning a ceasefire will be terminated. Trump is threatening hell in Gaza if Hamas doesn't free hostages. Okay, that's one example. We did talk about the hostages. Didn't really talk about the buying the Gaza real estate stuff. Next up, Gulf of America Day. Yes, Gulf of America Day. Is it going to be called Gulf of Mexico? Is it going to be called Gulf of America? I mentioned that, I think, briefly when it came out, but really didn't spend much time on it. It was February 9th was the first Gulf of America Day, by the way. Google Maps is now showing Gulf of Mexico as Gulf of America for app users in the U.S., not in Mexico, however. Associated Press is now blocked from the Oval Office for not using the Gulf of America as their standard guidance. They wanted to keep going with Gulf of Mexico, and Trump got to use that in a way that was beneficial to him. He just said, oh, well, now you can't come because you're not listening to what we're doing here. You're not following the guidance of the United States of America. There you go. We didn't really talk about that much. Gulf of America, does it appear on a map? Does it not appear on a map? Greenland! Do we own Greenland yet? We talked briefly about that maybe once. Lots of coverage has gone into it. Trump wants to buy Greenland again. This is why he's so interested in the world's largest island. And now there's a new bill coming out. Proposed bill would allow Trump to explore buying Greenland and renaming the island. Not Greenland, but Red, White, and Blueland. Because instead of green, it's red, white, and blue. There's lots of obviously interesting things about Greenland strategically. There's reasons for him to be interested in that, but you know, I mean, buying it, how much are you going to go back and forth on that? How about Canada being the 51st state? Again, didn't spend that much time about it. Maybe mention it once or twice. Trump says he's serious about wanting Canada to become the 51st state. Is he? How much time do you want to spend on that? How much time do you want to go back and forth? Well, do we want it? Do we want Canada as our 51st state? Would Trudeau be the right governor for that state? How would that work legally? Can we just import a state like that? There's a lot to talk about here. We didn't really do that all that much here, though, to be honest with you. Now, Trudeau is saying Trump is serious about Canada becoming the 51st state. He's freaking out about it a little bit. So that's interesting. Might talk about that a little bit. Panama Canal is another one. Trump reiterates his threat to retake the Panama Canal or something very powerful will happen. Oh, another big, is he threatening Panama? He's going to go and invade Panama. Lots of discussion in the media that I saw back and forth about whether he really would invade Panama. Why would he do that? They're not our enemies. You're going to go in there and invade Panama. We didn't spend that much time on it, though, honestly, over the past couple of weeks. China deriding U.S. pressure and coercion as Panama scraps the Belt and Road deal with Beijing. Among the canal standoff. Now, that's important to talk about. You see the pattern here at all? At all? We didn't really talk about half of those stories. We did talk about the other half. And that's the way I like to think about things in the Trump era. In order to understand a Donald Trump presidency, you need to understand how he thinks about the media and how he thinks about negotiations. You need to think about how he thinks about the art of the deal. This is Donald Trump. This is what he does. It's what he does all the time. It's what he did often in his first term and seems to be even more focused on doing in his second term. He also wants to control the media. He wants the media talking about what he wants them to be talking about. And there is, and you could say a lot of things about Donald Trump. A lot of people don't like him that much. But there has never been anyone as successful in controlling the media as Donald Trump is. He can make them talk about whatever he wants. Whatever he wants, at any time, he can do it. He's very, very successful about it. And you know what? Everybody on CNN, everybody on ABC, everybody on NBC, everybody on CBS, they fall for it face first every single time. Every single time he brings up something, they go into it. They act like it's going to end the world. The fires of hell are going to rain down on all of us because of what Donald Trump said yesterday. Did you hear it? Did you hear it? Did you hear it? Let me say it again. Let me say it again. Let me say it more hyperbolically. Did you know we're in the middle of a constitutional crisis? And on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And the question is, what is our responsibility in the midst of all this? The media wants it to be chaos constantly. Donald Trump loves manipulating the media. Where do we fit into all that? Where do we fit into that equation? Do we have a role? The media is always going to follow the dumb and easy story. They are always going to do the same thing every single time with us. They're all going to be like, he wants to buy Gaza. Where will these people live? Well, that's cultural genocide. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. Let's have 9 experts on who are going to say that the poor Hamas supporters from Gaza are not going to have their homes intact. And they're not going to be able to move into the new Trump golf course. Should they be able? Should they get free tea times? Should they get the first choice? Should they get a week of open tea times before anyone else at the resort gets the opportunity? Would that be fair? And we could talk about that over and over and over and over again. And what do we get out of it at the end? What is the purpose? Not for me, not for you, but for them. What's the purpose of it? Something very specific when it comes to purpose for Donald Trump. Something very specific when it comes to the media. But for us, what's our involvement in all that? We all know that Trump gets the media all spun up and they're not going to pay attention to anything that he does that's good. We know that. So I think from his perspective, it's like, why try? Let me give you another historic example of such things. And this is really important. It's not just about the media. It's about what Donald Trump's trying to get done. From Fire and Fury to Rocket Man, the various barbs traded between Trump and Kim Jong-un. Remember Little Rocket Man? Little Rocket Man. We're going to rain down fire and fury on North Korea. Oh, my gosh. The media reacted to that. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? He's threatening nuclear war. The entire world is going to be on fire in 6 days because of Donald Trump and his egregious actions. How dare he do that? He's reckless. He's risking the lives of our children and on and on and on and on. And then, like, I don't know, a couple weeks later, we fell in love. Trump swoons over letters from North Korea's Kim Jong-un. Yeah, they went in and they traded letters and then they, quote, fell in love, said Donald Trump. Which one of those was true? Which one of those should you react to? Because they reacted to that one, too. Can you believe this is a dictator? Do you know that this man is imprisoning his people? Do you know that he's starving his people? He won't even let doctors in. And he's in love with the man? That's what he's doing? Let's bring on a panel of 46 people. Because 45 would not be enough. We got to get that 46th person around the desk. 46 people. We want them all lined up and we want them to constantly tell us how that is now going to end the world. We are kissing the butt of a dictator. Can you believe that? We can do the same thing with Vladimir Putin. He's kissing the butt of Vladimir Putin. Do you believe that? He wants to be a dictator. He loves being a dictator and on and on and on and on and on. And you look at the record of what he's done to these places. He seems to have improved relations dramatically and discounted the possibility of war with North Korea. He seems to be making moves in that direction as well with Russia. His policies on Russia, particularly in the first administration, he hasn't really had the second term developed fully yet, but in the first term were much harsher than Joe Biden's or Barack Obama's policies against Russia, particularly in the non-war period. So what do you do with that information? What do you do with it? Do you just keep repeating the same activity over and over again? When he says something, you freak out and you say the world's going to end. And then he says the opposite thing. And then you freak out and say the world's going to end for the opposite reason, as if there's any credibility in doing that whatsoever. Is that how you deal with that? Or do you maybe understand what's going on? And it's important for us to understand. I think we all can understand this. So we could go through all these stories, right? Riviera of the Middle East. What's he trying to do there? Does he care about a development in the Middle East? You think he really wants to be developed? Maybe he does. Maybe he does. But hostages. That is a message to those people to say, we're fine just bulldozing the place and putting a golf course there if you don't give these hostages back. Give the hostages back or we'll flatten it and get it ready to pave. Gulf of America. He wants to go after the media. He's going after Mexico. He's sending a message to Mexico. He's saying, hey, we're not going to be manipulated by you. We're the big boys on this block. And he's sending a message to the media and saying, you guys will come along and you'll respect what we're doing here. There's a message in each one of these. Greenland, it actually is strategically important. Is he going to go buy it? I mean, he would, I think, if it were available for sale. If you could find it on Zillow and it had a for sale icon next to it, he'd probably click on it. But is it really the end goal to go buy Greenland, or is it an end goal to improve our situation there, to have strategic advantage there, to make sure that China does not get that advantage there? Same thing with Panama. That's the next one I went through. Canada, obviously, was the trade stuff. We already saw that go through. We saw kind of an outlandish statement, 51st state. And then you saw them back off and send 10,000 troops and do these other things that he wanted. Panama, same thing. We saw them. They're going to be ending their relationship with China to secure the Panama Canal. Our military ships can go through without these high costs. didn't just happen. Now, you might say, like, why didn't he just ask them for that? And maybe he could have. Maybe he could have gone about it a different way. But over and over and over again, this is the way Trump acts, and this is the way he gets results. And he's getting a lot of these results over and over and over again with this approach. So every one of these things has a goal. It's not about the thing he's saying. It's not about the splashy thing he's saying in social media. It's about what he wants on the other side of that. He's negotiating. This is the art of the deal to Donald Trump. It's what I read The Art of the Deal when I was like 12 years old. And I was a loser, just in case you were wondering about that. But I did. I read the book and I this is incredible. This is how you get deep. This is how business gets done in New York and the big skyscrapers. It was fascinating to me. And at the end of the day, this is the Donald Trump that we have as president. He's doing those same things. He does it differently than other presidents. But I'm not breaking news here. We all know how he does this. He wrote about it in the book a million years ago. He did it in his first term. He's doing it again in his second term. Why the media can't pick up on this, I don't know. But our responsibility, both as citizens of this country and as this particular show goes, is to understand that he is negotiating, but he's not negotiating with us. We are not the victims of this negotiation, you and I. We don't have to just dance around and follow every one of these bouncing balls. I would much rather focus on what he's doing. You can talk all day about what he's saying, but we don't have to chase all around the world to try to track down every single one of these things that he says and act like it's the biggest thing in the world and it's going to light the world on fire and oh, panic, 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 panic. We don't have to do that. The media doesn't have to do it either, but they choose to. They're motivated by money, or if they're actually all this freaked out about how Donald Trump is this evil fascist that they can never provide any information as to what he's doing to further that. Oh, he's cutting costs in government. Yeah, it sounds real fascist. I don't know if you saw the budgets in Germany. They aren't small. They had some real financial problems because they spent a lot of money. What we want to focus on here, and what I would encourage you to focus on your day-to-day, is to focus on what Trump does, what Trump says. Trump says things a lot. He says a lot of things that he doesn't even mean. Is he best buddies with Kim Jong-un? Does he love Kim Jong-un? Or does he want to blow him out of the water and turn him into a giant puddle? I don't know. Neither one of those is true exactly. What's true is he wants Kim Jong-un to not cause a war. He wants to have a good relationship with Kim Jong-un so that we don't blow up. So he says nice things about him. Those nice things mean nothing to Donald Trump. Mean nothing to him. He's trying to get to an end goal, which he believes is going to benefit the United States of America. Perhaps you've heard the term America first. He believes it. He really does. And you can criticize how he gets there if you want to, but isn't it more sensible to just realize what's going on here? He's trying to get to the next step in his chosen policy path, and he often uses words that you might not choose, that the media might not choose, that CNN personalities might not choose, but that Donald Trump believes are effective and honestly has shown have been effective over and over again. Focus on what Trump does, not what Trump says. I've heard a million freaking stories and monologues about, oh gosh, I can't believe he's being insulting to Justin Trudeau, 51st state. Oh, buying Greenland. How could he do such a thing? I can't believe, is he going to invade Greenland? I'm very concerned. Oh no, is he going to put pickleball courts up in Gaza? Is that what he's going to do? Oh my gosh, we need 68 people on the CNN panel tonight. We need 4 more desks brought in. We don't have enough experts to talk about pickleball. Is it going to be open play? What's going to happen? We could all get fired up about it, but you know what you're not going to hear? Anything except from a very chosen few about this, for example. Exclusive from Bill Malugin, per senior DHS source, since February 1st, the number of known gotaways at the southern border has plummeted to a daily average of just 132. That's a 93% decrease from the highs of the Biden administration in fiscal year 2023, when the average was 1,800 known gotaways per day. Reminder, the Biden administration recorded a staggering 670,674 known gotaways in fiscal year 2023 alone, according to data I obtained from the CBP via a FOIA request last year. That's an average of 1,800 per day. Trump's current average of 132 per day, assuming it held, would be about 48,000 in a year. That would be the lowest number by far in at least 15 15 years. Still very early into the Trump administration, but a snapshot of where we are right now. Statement from DHS, delivering consequences has results. Illegal crossings are down. Gotaways are down. Criminal prosecutions are on the rise. Daily reports of large groups in Mexico, Guatemala, turning back south and surrounding, I think that's supposed to be surrendering to authorities, requesting to go home, and we only have just begun. Policy matters. Here are the numbers in the chart from Bill Mulugan as well. Fiscal year 2010, you saw numbers in the 150,000, 86,000, 105,000, 170,000. And you get the pattern here all the way up to Biden. It was basically in the low 100,000 range, which I would also argue is still too high, but then exploded to 387,000 in 2021, 606,000 in 2022, and 670,000 in 2023. We are now on the pace for 48,000, a 93% drop. That's what Trump is doing. That is actual news. That's something we should be talking about. You should hear endless monologues about that. Not about whether Canada's going to be our 51st state. Not about whether we're putting pickleball courts up in Gaza. Not about, any of this nonsense. All of it has a sensible goal, not a nonsense goal. But he uses the flair of the media. He uses it to get what he wants. And while he's doing that, and he's saying those things, and that's distracting everybody else. We're going to focus on what he's actually doing and what really matters. We're talking about a 93% drop of the border. It was the number one issue for voters. And we've got a 93% drop. Is that not more important than whether we're putting up pickleball courts on the Gaza Strip? Is that not more important than whether Canada is actually our 51st state, or maybe we'll import Mongolia first and it'll be our 52nd state? Something else is going to pop up in the next few days, and it's supposed to take all of our attention away from what really matters. We're going to do our best to keep the focus on what is important. As a man you may know, Jalen Hurts, quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, Super Bowl MVP, once said, "We want to keep the main thing, the main thing. The main thing here is what actually matters, what's actually being done. Not every single flare on social media that we're supposed to get freaked out about. Not Donald Trump's tweets about Taylor Swift. We want to keep the main thing, the main thing." And that's what we're going to do here on Stu Does America. I got to be honest, under the right circumstances, I would play pickleball in the Gaza Strip. That's just something I'm going to throw out there. Okay, we hear a lot in the world about the supply chain, and it is unpredictable. It is. It can be very fragile at times when your package is delayed for weeks. That's happened to me. It's annoying. But what if it was not just some, hey, I ordered something from Amazon, it's not coming in. What if it was your essential medications that are delayed? That's an emergency. That's not an inconvenience. When we're entering into yet another period of potential uncertainty right now, the time is to prepare. And we need to do that together, honestly. One step you could do, because a lot of people talk about food and water, and those are vitally important. You have to have those things in your supply, but you also need your medications. And you can provide emergency medications that you need when you go to Jace. Whether it's traveling or whether you're buying for your kids or just need peace of mind in case of an emergency, Jace has got you covered. And right now they're holding giveaways all month long so you can make sure that you have the right medications on hand the moment you need them. You can go from anything from the travel case, that's called Jace Go, or you could go to a fully custom Jace case. The bottom line is you got to protect yourself and your family from uncertainty. This is an easy step to do it. They've done all the work for you. All you got to do is get in touch with them. Jace.com, J-A-S-E.com. Enter the giveaway or just purchase your own case. Enter the code STU at checkout and you'll get a discount on your order right now. The promo code is STU at Jace.com, J-A-S-E.com. The promo code is STU.
Kaffee in seiner besten Form. Mit Cubo wird jeder Kaffee auf Knopfdruck zum Genussmoment. Denn mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo genießt du feinsten Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Vollmundige Aromen dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie und über 17 Sorten Kaffee für jeden Geschmack. Erlebe Premium-Kaffee schon ab 29 Euro. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
I want to bring in Angela Morabito. She is the spokesperson for the Defense of Freedom Institute, a visiting fellow for the Independent Women's Forum. and the former U.S. Department of Education Press Secretary. Angela, thanks so much for coming back on the program. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You were in the middle of this. I mean, you were in the middle of the Department of Education. You saw it all from the inside, and you're seeing the Trump efforts here in term number two to try to change everything that Biden put into place. And of course, the just generational bloat of that organization and what it does. What do you think of his efforts so far?
I think they're incredibly impressive. I don't know that there's ever been a president more ready for his second term than President Trump, because what he's done in these first couple weeks of his administration is really take a stand for students and say that the status quo is over. Now, that's a threat to a lot of people. That's how you get those progressives standing on the front steps of the Department of Education demanding to be let in because, I don't know, heaven forbid we cut wasteful spending. But President Trump has made clear from day one that he is the school choice president, and he's going to do whatever it takes to take power out of D.C. and put it back in the hands of families.
I love the idea that he's a school choice president. This is something that, you know, I feel like my entire life as a conservative, we talked about. There was always conversations about school choice. Oh, vouchers are coming. We'll get there eventually. And no one ever really took those steps to make it happen. And then COVID happened. And look, COVID, obviously a terrible time in our nation's history. But if there you find one bright spot in that terrible, terrible time, it's the idea that parents kind of woke up and saw what their kids were being taught and saw how all of this worked. And we have seen a massive movement across the country towards school choice. And Trump seems to be on that bandwagon.
That's right. I would say he's even leading the charge, because we're now at more than a dozen states that have enacted universal school choice. I hope we'll be at 50 states here sooner rather than later. But what COVID did in terms of education was show parents what their kids were learning and not learning. When school was happening at the kitchen table, you couldn't hide when students cannot read, write, and do math. And a lot of parents realized the horrible truth that a school that maybe they thought was doing fine for their child really actually wasn't. So school choice is a movement that cannot and will not be stopped. Parents demand it across party lines. I know we talk about this as a political issue, but it's really not. The overwhelming majority of voters on both sides of the political aisle believe that parents should be in the driver's seat when it comes to where their children are educated. I agree with those parents, that I know that the Trump administration, including future Secretary McMahon, does as well. So we're about to see school choice unleashed across the country, and it'll be to the benefit of students who really cannot afford to wait for their schools to improve.
Yeah, it's incredibly important. Let me pause on COVID here for a second, though. The New York Times had a story out yesterday, I think it was, COVID learning losses, and they highlighted a new study that's out. And let me share the results of this. This is reading achievement changes from the New York Times. Again, the states that lost the least when it came to COVID learning losses, states like Louisiana, Hawaii's in there as well, but Alabama, Mississippi, Indiana, Georgia, Texas, Tennessee, the states with the most learning loss: Maine, Vermont, Oregon, Nebraska, Delaware, Oklahoma. The same thing over on the math side, lost the least. It was Alabama, Louisiana, Tennessee, Hawaii again is in there, but Utah, South Carolina, Mississippi, almost all red states losing the least. Who lost the most? Virginia, New Mexico, Oregon, Delaware, Maine, Alaska, Minnesota, mostly blue states. This is the pattern across all of this data. And a lot of it has to do with how long these states locked down, right? In these blue states, they were locked down for a year. They had massive, massive problems. The red states that may have closed down for a couple of months and then brought everybody back for the new school year in 2020, they saw the least. And we're seeing real ramifications, and this is a problem. The Democrats focused on this. They made it a central part of their platform to make sure teachers did not have to go back to schools, that kids did not go back to school for all that time. And now our kids are paying the price.
They are. COVID school closures were a disaster for students, and it didn't have to be this way. We've even seen this in international test scores, that countries in Scandinavia that famously reopened their schools really quickly didn't suffer the same learning losses that America's students did. But what we saw, especially in big blue cities, was that teacher union bosses really held education hostage. And they said, well, we're not going to go back to school until we have, name your favorite progressive policy, right? They demanded billions upon billions of dollars in additional spending. And still, they just didn't want to go back to school and do their jobs. We also saw Congress try to fix this, though. There was something called the ESSER Fund. It stands for Elementary and Secondary School Education Relief Fund, that had nearly $190 billion allocated by Congress to help fix learning loss. But it didn't accomplish that goal because in too many places, especially in those big blue cities, we saw people spend that money on things like ropes courses and athletic scoreboards and landscaping and hiring gender administrators like they did in Milwaukee. Basically anything and everything besides helping students learn. Now, we saw the opposite of that in states like Louisiana and Mississippi that went all in on reading instruction, on targeted high-dose tutoring for students who needed it. They put students first, and we're seeing that now in their new nation's report card scores, where they had greater gains than much of the rest of America. So there's no secret sauce here to getting kids to learn. All it takes is putting their interests first. But too many places refuse to do just that.
You mentioned Linda McMahon as someone who's really looking forward to move these policies in the right direction. And it's funny, I was watching the Netflix documentary about the McMahon, Mr. McMahon it's called, and I've forgotten that she participated in, like, you know, some of the WWE stuff. Like, she was in the middle, like, hitting people and stuff back in the day. And, like, there's this criticism bubbling out there of her, if there is one, that she, while she's a really accomplished businesswoman, she's done a lot of things in her life, she's not the right pick for education secretary. She doesn't have any applicable experience here. She's not going to do a good job with that. Is that accurate at all?
Not at all. I think we're looking at a future education secretary who's willing to get in the ring, literally and metaphorically, to fight for the right things. And she's done that. She has that track record. She served on a state board of education. She spent more than a decade as a university trustee. She even holds a teaching credential from college. So we both know that the left loves to spin a narrative around President Trump's nominees. But I'm honestly surprised that they try to sort of drum up this lack of experience narrative about future Secretary McMahon, because it's so blatantly untrue.
Let's talk about the school choice thing directly policy-wise, because, you know, obviously, like, education, I think both of us would prefer it's mostly handled in the states. What can the federal government do to further this?
Sure. So the federal government does have a role in education. I just think that the functions of the Department of Education could be better handled by other agencies. One of those core functions is upholding federal civil rights law in education. That may belong really at the Department of Justice. Let's have the lawyers do the lawyering. Federal student aid, the massive student loan portfolio, shoving the nation's largest consumer lender inside of a federal agency doesn't really make a ton of sense. So the Defense of Freedom Institute is really kind of backing the idea of what would federal student aid look like as an independent agency that gets to function more like a bank. It could serve borrowers and taxpayers better. Another function that has gotten a lot of attention in recent days is administering the nation's report card. And that gives us some really critical data on how well, or on the flip side, how terribly our schools are performing. And we found out just a couple weeks ago that 1 in 3 eighth graders are functionally illiterate. Now, someone can try to defend the status quo 6 ways to Sunday, but they can't defend that result. That's really indefensible. And I think parents, taxpayers, teachers, even students, everybody knows that. So I think the level of transparency and accountability at the federal level has to increase. And there are ways we can do that while actually decreasing the size of government.
Angela, there's also this thought of taking, look, I'd like all this stuff to be handled in the states as much as possible. There's obviously a lot of federal money going through there, and there might be steps to get to my ultimate nirvana here. But, like, the idea of taking the federal money that we are spending on education and sending it to the states and letting local people make local decisions about how they educate their kids seems like a really easy to accomplish, quick midpoint to whatever we're going to that I might view as more of a more federalist solution. Is that something that's possible? I mean, is that seems like a quick and easy solution here.
It is. And like most great solutions, it's really simple, right? Like, I love that simple kind of elegant answer. And I want to help you get to that nirvana. But it's going to take some help from Congress. It would take an act of Congress to dismantle the Department of Ed. And that doesn't look like just locking the door and throwing away the key. That looks like a really thoughtful sort of unwinding of this giant knot that we have up in DC right now. But one of the best things we could do is, as you mentioned, take all of those competitive grants that are right now administered by bureaucrats and instead just block grant that money to the states. It means more federal education dollars can actually flow to classrooms, and it puts more power in the hands of states and local communities.
Yeah, and also it lets you just vote for against your, if you don't like the way they're handling those dollars, you can vote against your local person, which is great as well. Last one for you, Angela. I go back to the Reagan days. I like the idea of just completely ending the Department of Education. It's been an idea that's been popular among conservatives for a very long time. You work there. Obviously, there's a lot of people there there's a lot of good people there who are working hard and care about education. But the role for the federal government, in my view, has to be minimized. Is just ending the Department of Education, is that the correct goal?
It is, but it is not as simple as it might sound, right? We're looking forward to a thoughtful dismantling of the department, and I'm very happy that future Secretary McMahon is so willing to work herself out of a job. And that means block granting more money to the states. It means reassigning core functions of the department to other agencies, things like enforcing federal civil rights law or administering federal student aid. These are really big jobs, but we don't need a Department of Education to do it. We don't need 4,400 bureaucrats spending $80 billion a year and not educating a single student. We can do so much better in our schools if we just put power back in the hands of parents. And I think that getting rid of the Department of Education in a thoughtful and orderly way would be a tremendous step forward to the goals we all want to see for America's kids.
All right. Angela Morabito, she's spokesperson for the Defense of Freedom Institute and visiting fellow for the Independent Women's Forum. Thanks so much for coming back on the show. Angela, it's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, Frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Well, your new director of national intelligence is Tulsi Gabbard. Gabbard is confirmed following an uphill Senate battle, says Fox News. It was sort of an uphill battle. I mean, if you think about her path, it's really fascinating, right? She was running a campaign for Bernie Sanders in Hawaii not that long ago. She was running for president as a Democrat not that long ago. Has what seems like a real transition, a pretty visible arc as she kind of moves a little bit more towards the right. What's interesting about it, though, she has, I think, moved more towards the right. She's now no longer a Democrat. But on the issues that she's that are applicable to her current job, she hasn't really moved at all. She's the same person that she was back in those days, very suspicious of these government institutions. I think that's something that Trump likes. You know, I think, you know, he sees the world. He leans maybe that way, maybe against sort of the traditional national defense Republican in some of those things. Certainly J.D. Vance does that as well. And it was a questionable situation. I thought she was the lowest percentage chance of one of these people getting through as far as confirmation. The markets were saying it was about 50% after her hearing. And it looks like she did get through actually on a 52-48 vote. You might notice that's not 53-47, which is what the Senate is. One Republican voted against her. That was Mitch McConnell. And that's probably the biggest part of all of this, is it shows that Mitch McConnell's power is gone. I mean, if McConnell is opposing a lot of these people, you'd think, you know, with all of his relationships over all these years, he'd still be able to, cobble together a few senators to come with him to oppose someone he didn't want. I think that he'll probably vote against RFK Jr. as well. It does not seem to be the case. It seems to be that now he is just kind of one guy who's going to come out and oppose Trump from time to time, but does not have to have that establishment block anymore. The establishment is now Trump. I mean, that is what it is. The McConnell thing's dead. It's gone. While he's still around, it's not real opposition anymore. Trump is ordering plans for large-scale workforce cuts and expanding Elon Musk's power, which is incredible. The relationship seems to be in a good place right now. You could see what the media is doing. They are doing everything they can to try to come after Elon Musk, and not just come after him and criticize him, but come after him and prop him up. The Time magazine cover this week is Elon Musk sitting at the Resolute desk at the Oval Office. The message there is very simple. They did the same thing with Steve Bannon in the first term. They said, oh, it's actually Bannon who's manipulating Donald Trump. He's the real power there. And, you know, Bannon was fired within, I don't know, a couple months. Elon Musk is a different story. It seems like Trump now sees this coming and it can push back against it if he does. This is another situation that happened. Elon Musk defending Doge alongside Trump in striking Oval Office moment. Also, an adorable moment because Elon Musk's kid is there and he's really cute. And he's very much kid doing kid things as they're trying to be serious. But look at the dynamic here of this clip. And you can
and
see
also,
exactly
could
what
you mention
doing.
Some of the things that your team has found, some of the crazy numbers, including the woman that walked away with about $30 million,
right.
et cetera?
Well, we do find it sort of rather odd that, you know, there are quite a few people in the bureaucracy who have ostensibly a salary of a few hundred thousand dollars, but somehow managed to accrue tens of millions of dollars in net worth while they are in that position, which is, you know, what happened to USAID. We're just curious as to where it came from. Maybe they're very good at investing, in which case we should take their investment advice, perhaps. But there seems to be mysteriously they get wealthy. We don't know why. Where does it come from?
Weird.
And I think the reality is that they're getting wealthy at taxpayer expense. That's the honest truth of it.
And you notice there was other points, questions coming from the media to Elon Musk, and that back and forth between Musk and the media with Donald Trump sitting there. This is something they're hoping to exploit. They're trying to play off of the ego of Donald Trump and say, like, look, they're treating Elon Musk as if he's the president. Maybe he's the real guy running things right now. He's the one responsible, hoping, assuming that Donald Trump's ego will get in the way and he will say, it's not him. In fact, I don't even like him. In fact, he's out of here. They want that relationship to break up, and they're trying very hard to break it up in front of our eyes. We will see if that happens or not. But, you know, I mean, Trump's smart. He's not going to see this. I mean, he's got to see this coming. So hopefully egos don't get in the way, because I think that we're seeing real, and this includes Musk's ego as well, we're seeing real progress as far as Doge is concerned, and hopefully we continue to see it. And I mentioned earlier about some of the things that were not so important that Trump talks about, or the way he talks about other people. You know, he talks about Vladimir Putin. He's complimenting him. Why is he doing that? Well, he's obviously trying to get the war over. That's one. But also, some other great things have come from that back and forth. When you don't have complete enemies, maybe things like this can happen, positive things. Freed American hostage Mark Fogel has landed in the U.S. after years of Russian captivity. His mom, who's like 95 years old, went to a Trump rally, and asked Trump, hey, if you become president, will you get my son out of Russia? Trump was like, yeah, sure. And so here he is. Pretty great. Really excited about that. And he also, and we don't know the outcome of this one yet, but another American hostage coming home tomorrow, which would actually be today. That is an interesting one, too. We don't know the details on that, but there was an initial report of one of the Trump's envoys, his plane landing in Moscow. And people were like, why is he in Moscow? What's going on? They actually had a phone call today. They're trying to get this over the finish line and get that war over, not to mention a bunch of our hostages home. So really positive developments there. Of course, whenever you're talking about Vladimir Putin, you don't know how long it's going to last. At any point, he can, you know, he can do something crazy and you know, change the momentum here. Same thing goes with Zelensky. Who knows which one of them is going to say no to whatever potential deal might be out there. But hopefully a deal is at least being talked about, and maybe we'll see an end to that war pretty soon. Well, Valentine's Day is Friday, and you make sure, you know, a couple days away, make sure you get something nice for your loved one this Valentine's Day season. And I don't know, this, maybe you started your own business too. If, particularly if you happen to be infested with cockroaches, there's some real possibilities for you this Valentine's Day season. An aquarium is offering cockroach sponsorships for Valentine's Day. And you might say, that doesn't seem sane, which is true. It does not. However, there's more to it than that. Basically, you can name a cockroach and then they will help you out with a little Valentine's Day video. The Valentine's season celebrate the special someone by sponsoring a cockroach in their honor. Your sponsored roach will be fed to one of our reptiles by our senior reptile keeper, Randy. No one else is going to, not Bob or Fred or Sally. No, it's Randy. He's going to do it. The feeding will be recorded and shared so you can watch your special roach over and over, which is not psychotic at all this Valentine's Day.